ninth canto, chapter 10, about verse 50, approximately. Yes, they didn't have things like that to just beat us over the head and overdose us many times over with just too much information and like that. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was there in Hastinapur, and Arjuna several months before had gone to Dwarka to see Lord Krishna and had not returned. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira saw all these inauspicious omens. There is a science of omens. You know, Srimati Radharani, when Krishna is coming, she hasn't seen him yet, but he's coming, he's not far away. Srimati Radharani experiences twitching in the left side of her body. And for a lady, if there is twitching in the left side of the body, that is very auspicious, like the eye or just any part of the left part of the body. However, gentlemen, if with a man, if the left side of his body twitches, it is considered inauspicious. For a man it is auspicious if the right side of the body twitches. So keep your eyes open, okay, for twitching. I won't go into it in detail, but don't go to visit people in a group of three. Either one, two, four, or more. Don't go in a group of three. And don't serve someone three of a particular item. Okay, ladies? Because it's inauspicious. Three of any item is inauspicious. Yeah. If an auspicious animal or an auspicious person or an auspicious animal like a cow passes you on your right side, it's auspicious. If an inauspicious animal, like, for example, guess what? A dog passes you on the right, it's inauspicious. They should pass you on the left because they're inauspicious. Oops, what happened? I lost it. So then I thought that if I read about all these things and how Maharaj Yudhisthira was upset seeing all these omens, I thought you might get a little depressed. And we don't want that. So I'm going to read you something very exciting and wonderful. And, yeah, inspiring for the new year. I'm going to read from the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 10, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, Ramachandra. I'm going to read a few verses beginning with verse 50. Agrahid asadam bratra pranipatya prasadita prajasvadharma nirata Varna Shrama Gunan Vita Jugopa Pitri Vad Ramo Maini Rain Pitaram Chetan. So this is describing the return of Lord Ram to Ayodhya after killing Ravana and rescuing Sita. Then they returned. So they returned, and Bharat was ruling, but he was not occupying the throne. He had put Lord Ram's sandals, his shoes, on the throne, and he was just sitting down, although he was managing the kingdom. And as soon as Lord Ram returned, Bharat immediately handed everything over to Lord Ram. So that verse we just read, Ninth Gata, chapter 10, verse 50, translation is as follows. Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Lord Bharat, Lord Ramachandra then accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father, and the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties of Varna and Ashram, accepted him as their father. So, being a big leader, or particularly a head of state, the head of a country, the rasa is parental. There are different types of duties, occupations, jobs, in which the rasa is parental. For example, being a teacher, the rasa is parental. You are meant to have a fatherly or motherly mood towards the students and deal with them in that way. So also, being a head of state, the rasa is parental. And Lord Ramachandra, he was so much in that mood. Plus, he was so expert at managing the kingdom and seeing that everything worked the way it should work and like that everyone was happy and cared for, and their needs were being seen to, and they were protected from criminals, and so many things we'll see as we read on. So they accepted Lord Ram like he was their father, and he accepted them like they were his children. Do you think we can do that with Mr. Zuma? I think Neeraj has some doubts. Well, yeah. It's an unfortunate situation. Let's carry on. And let's find another verse. Here we go. Tretiyam Vartamanayam Kalakrita Samo Bhavat Rame Rajani Dharmagye Sarvabhuta Sukha Vahe. Lord Ramachandra became king during Treta Yuga, but because of his good government, the age was like Satya Yuga. Everyone was religious and completely happy. Let me read the short purport here by Srila Prabhupada. Among the four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, the Kali Yuga is the worst. But if the process of Balashandharma is introduced, even in this age of Kali, the situation of Satya Yuga can be invoked. The Hare Krishna movement, or Krishna consciousness movement, is meant for this purpose. So, yes. If people take to the Sankirtan movement of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, they will certainly be freed from the contamination of Kali Yuga, and the people of this age will be happy, as people were in Satya Yuga, the golden age. Even if one is sinful and cannot give up sinful life immediately, if he chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with devotion and faith, he will certainly be freed from all sinful activities, and his life will be successful. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. This is the blessing of Lord Ramachandra, who has appeared in this age of Kali as Lord Gaurasundara. Right, so there are next verse 53. Now, just when I'm trying to read this, the phone rings. Ignore it. Nadi Vyadi Jaragvani Duka Shoka Bayakama Nityuscha Nityatam Nasid Rale Rajan Yadhokshate. Listen to this. You may have heard this before because it's a popular verse, but really, listen to this. It's amazing. When Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was the king of this world, all bodily and mental suffering, disease, old age, bereavement, lamentation, distress, fear, and fatigue were completely absent. There was even no death for those who did not want it. So there you are, I'm sure some of you at least, thinking, what? What? What is this? What on earth? This is like over-enthusiastic. Some over-enthusiastic devotee. But let us read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. All these facilities existed because of Lord Ramachandra's presence as the king of the entire world. A similar situation could be introduced immediately. even in this age called Kali, the worst of all ages. It is said, Kali Kale, Nama Rupe, Krishna Avatar. Krishna descends in this Kali Yuga in the form of his holy name. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
As your Prabhupada just says, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. But I knew you would all join me in saying, chanting the whole mantra. If we chant offenselessly, that is a bit of an if, isn't it? Anyway, if we do. If we chant offenselessly, Ram and Krishna are still present in this age. The kingdom of Ram was immensely popular and beneficial. And the spreading of this Hare Krishna movement can immediately introduce a similar situation even in this Kali Yuga. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just incredible? That is true. This is Srila Bhagavatam, and it's been confirmed by Srila Prabhupada. So Kali Yuga has really set in. It has really set in. It has really taken root. And, oh, it is just too shocking. And if you read about it, hear about the bad things that are going on, just a little of it, it's too depressing and just nauseating, actually. It's so terrible. But Shukadev Goswami is making a point here. And Srila Prabhupada is giving his strong confirmation that Krishna consciousness is more powerful. Kali Yuga is very powerful, but the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is more powerful. Yes. So, if we take shelter of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and Srila Prabhupada said, if we chant offenselessly, then a similar situation as was there during the Ram Rajya, the rule of Lord Ram, the kingdom of Lord Ram. A similar situation can become established even now. Let me just read that verse again, just so we get it. When Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was the king of this world, all bodily and mental suffering, disease, old age, bereavement, lamentation, distress, fear, and fatigue were completely absent. There was even no death for those who did not want it. So you can just imagine if we were, interviewed by particularly some American news agency, you know, what do you Hare Krishnas think, and what are you trying to do, and something like that. And if we read that verse to them and the purport there, you can just imagine them just laughing and thinking, oh, this is fanaticism, like just bizarre fanaticism. But it's not, it's Srimad Bhagavata, and it's Srila Prabhupada. So Kali Yuga is very powerful, but the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is more powerful, and actually it's a lot more powerful. All you have to do really is give it a chance. You have to give the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra a chance to act. So what does that mean, give it a chance? It means we have to chant it, as Prabhupada said, offenselessly. Offenseless chanting has a huge impact, incredible impact. When Lord Chaitanya was initiated by Ishvara Puri in Gaya, then just immediately after, right on the spot, Lord Chaitanya asked him, so now I'm initiated, what's my duty now? What should I do? And he suggested, Lord Chaitanya suggested, should I discuss dry Vedanta philosophy? Means very intricate and complex and in many ways apparently impersonal philosophy of spiritual life, like, as we've mentioned on, I think now, almost innumerable occasions, I am you and you are me and we are all together. Does that sound cool and deep and profound? I am you and you are me. Wow. Ooh. Sounds ecstatic. No, it sounds crazy. Because I am me and you are you. And we may be together, but not like that, merged. We are individuals at the lotus feet of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya asked Ishvara Puri, should I get into studying that and discussing it and debating it with other people now that I'm initiated and I'm committed to my spiritual life? Would this be the right thing for me to do? And Ishvara Puri said no. And Ishvara Puri spoke one famous verse to Lord Chaitanya. What we should really do is Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam, Kalonas Jevanas Jevanas Jevagatiya Anita. What you should do is chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names of Hari, Krishna. In this Kali Yuga, there's no other way to achieve the goal of life. So this was the advice or instruction of Ishvara Puri to Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, in the position of a disciple, being instructed like that, Lord Chaitanya immediately started doing it. So he started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And as soon as he started, what are called the Astasattvika Bhavas overwhelmed Lord Chaitanya. They are the main emotional ecstasies experienced by a person on the level of Krishna Prema. Things like tears coming from the eyes, uncontrollably. You know, that's not, it doesn't mean like if we get upset if something goes wrong in our lives and we get upset, sometimes we may cry, some relative dies, or something a little drastic like that, we may cry if someone steals our bunny chow, or if we get our beautiful ice cream and then suddenly it falls off on the ground. Wow. So anyway, we may cry sometimes, but not like that. What this means is that the spiritual energy of the Lord, the internal potency, Shuddha-sattva visheshatma, that internal potency of pure transcendental goodness enters the heart of the devotee on that high level of pure Krishna consciousness, and that internal potency contacts the element water in our body. That's what happens. And the element water, they say, what, when I was at school, the body is 70% water. Is that right, Dr. Michael? Or something? Has it changed? Anyway, our bodies are a lot of water. So that element becomes stimulated by the internal potency. All that water within the body. And then it comes out the eyes. So it's not just like our tears, but when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in the Ratha Yatra, in the Kirtan, then tears would come from his eyes, and the tears would come from his eyes, and squirt out like water from a syringe, or even perhaps more like water from a hose. Just really, really squirting out. And all the people surrounding Lord Chaitanya and watching him dancing, you know, there's like this whole big group of people around Lord Chaitanya as he's spinning wildly in ecstasy with these tears shooting out, they all became saturated. From head to foot, all their clothes were just wringing wet. Now that's different from when we may cry if some problem arises or some disaster occurs. So yeah, the Lord Chaitanya there, when he started chanting, then these different symptoms occurred. Like, well, we just mentioned tears. How those tears of ecstasy are different from our tears, regular tears. So when the internal potency contacts the element air in the body, there is air within the body, of course. So when the internal potency, which is unlimitedly powerful and just on a higher level altogether than the material energy which our bodies are made of, so when that internal potency contacts the element air in our body, then the body shakes. They refer to it as quivering, like Prabhupada in Nectar of Devotion, quivering, trembling, something like that. We've all quivered a bit, trembled a bit. Sometimes if you caught in the cold. I remember one of the first times I went to Russia. I was in Moscow. It was January. And whereas here, of course, sometimes it gets a bit too hot, today it was a bit humid and a little unpleasant heat. But there, you know, today is probably 30 degrees or something. There, that day, it was about minus 30 in Moscow. And there was me, dressed like this. And I had my characteristic reddy brown jacket, if you know the jacket. Some of you may be familiar with it. And that's what I had. And my little orange woolly hat. And that was me. And we were at the airport. They took us out on a bus to the plane a little bit out on the outer part of the airport. And they dropped us off and the bus went away. But the airplane was not ready. We had to wait standing on the tarmac for like 15 minutes in minus 30, dressed like this. And on my feet, I had my sandals. And by the time we got on, my body was shaking. Like, I would say, practically uncontrollably. It was really severe. My fingers were no longer able to hold my bag, to sort of clench. They became dysfunctional. Anyway, so much for that. But when the internal potency contacts the element here in the body, then the body shakes so much. Raghunath Das Goswami is described in Bhakti Ratnakara. Raghunath Das Goswami, he was editing a book by Srila Rupa Goswami called Lalita Madhava. And in Lalita Madhava, in the beginning, in the earlier parts, Krishna leaves Vrindavan and all the bridge buses are thrown just into a bottomless ocean of separation. And Rupa Goswami describes there how a number of them died. A number of them died. Someone, I forget exactly who it was, threw themselves off the top of Govardhan Hill and just died on the rocks. Someone went into the Yamuna River and just went in and didn't come out. Yeah, so it's quite a shocking description. So Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, who is on such an exalted level of love of God, way beyond any of us, to put it mildly, he was now reading this, editing it, and he became so overwhelmed with this particular type of ecstasy. His body was shaking so much, it appeared that it was going to literally fall to pieces. You know, parts would just dislocate and separate themselves from the rest of the body, and he was going to die. So the devotees told Rupa Goswami about this, that you've got to do something. And Rupa Goswami said, well, just tell him to give you the book. Take the book away from him. But Raghunath Das would not give the book away. He said, no, this is my sacred duty from my spiritual master, Srila Rupa Goswami. This is my duty. I cannot give it up. So they came back to Rupa Goswami and explained. And so Rupa Goswami said, okay, I know what to do. He very quickly wrote a short drama. It is called Dan Kali Komudi. It's about the tax collecting pastimes. And it's very jolly and happy and jovial and full of laughing and joking. So he very quickly wrote that, like in 1 or 2 days or something. And then went and met with Raghunath Das Goswami, who said, you know what? I want to make some alterations to the Lalita Madhava. So give it back. But in the meantime, I have this new book, Dan Kali Komudi, and I want you to edit this in the meantime, please. So Raghunath Das Goswami agreed. They exchanged books, and now Raghunath Das is reading this happy, happy book. It's so happy, it's amazing, actually. Incredible story. And that problem of too much movement of the element here within the body and the dangerous body shaking to pieces, it went. So Lord Chaitanya, he was chanting there, and all these things were happening. To the point that he would try to chant, Hare Krishna. I knew you'd say that. Very good. Thank you. And he would say, Hare Krishna, and he couldn't even say it. He would say, Hare and that would be it. On the ground, unconscious, uncontrollable. Yeah. He just couldn't get the mantra out. Just too much ecstasy. Don't any of us think that I must be careful not to chant too nicely because I might become too ecstatic and lose control. Don't worry about that. If that problem arises, we will deal with it at that time. So Lord Chaitanya, acting as if he was an ordinary person and an ordinary devotee and an ordinary disciple, he went to Ishwarpuri and he said, you know, I have a serious problem. I'm trying to follow your instruction, but I can't. I must be doing something wrong. You've got to help me. Sort me out. Straighten me out. Whenever I try to chant Hare Krishna, I can't do it. I just become overpowered and I'm unable. So please help me. And Ishwarapuri, of course, he's extremely intelligent and extremely perceptive. So he understood who was Lord Chaitanya and he understood what was going on. So Ishwarapuri said to Lord Chaitanya, he laughed and said, congratulations, my dear child, you have perfected your life. So now, the thing is this, we chant, I've been chanting 16 rounds a day since, I joined the temple in London on January the 7th, 1973, so in about, say, plus or minus a week, it is going to be 40 years. And I started chanting. I didn't immediately start chanting 16 rounds, but maybe it took like three or four days, and then I was chanting 16 rounds. So I've been chanting 16 rounds, plus in kirtan, etc., etc., basically for 40 years. But you never see that happen to me, do you? Did you ever see me rolling on the floor? Or maybe if you come with us to Vrindavan, we sometimes roll in the dust. That's a little different. But crying uncontrollably and just... No, you don't. And we don't see it happen to any of us. But if someone chants really without offense and really purely, then this will happen. Of course, if you try, at least if you try your best, then, you know, you can chant 16 rounds. It's not so hard. It's not very hard, actually. You can chant 16 rounds and you try to be attentive as much as you're able. So at least we get something from it, isn't it? If you got nothing from it, how could you continue doing it? You could not. If you actually got nothing out of it, and it's just, you know, this sort of meaningless sound, and you're getting no taste from it at all, you would not be able to continue. So therefore, any of you here who are chanting 16 rounds, particularly those of you chanting 16 rounds, then we know you are getting something out of it. You're getting some taste, but not like what Lord Chaitanya was getting. And not like what Raghunath Das Goswami was getting. And Rupa Goswami says, when I chant the two syllables, Krishna, he says, I don't know how much nectar is in these two syllables, Krishna. He says, when I chant these two syllables, Krishna, then the taste for my tongue, the experience of the pronouncing it, the chanting, it is so nectarian. It is so beautiful. He says, I wish I had 1,000 tongues. The taste is just so extreme. How can I taste it properly with one tongue? And when I hear those two syllables, Krishna, then I wish I had millions of ears, because the sound is just so amazing, so relishable. How can I enjoy it, experience it, and relish it adequately as it deserves and as I want, with my two ears? So, in other words, at least I can speak for myself, but I suspect I can speak for all of us, that there's a big difference between that and what we experience. Am I right? Anyway, maybe some of you are just super duper devotees, getting some incredible experience. We get some experience, and it's very nice. It's very, very nice. But it's not on that level. So, the thing is this, in regard to what Srila Prabhupada was saying here, that if we chant Hare Krishna offenselessly, then the whole world can be changed, and it can become like Satya Yuga, or like the time when Lord Ram was ruling. If we chant offenselessly, so in other words, the more of us who really do chant offenselessly and spread chanting in an offenseless way, the greater the impact will be on this world, just as, in a proportionate sense, just like the difference between our humble experience of something when we chant Hare Krishna and the experience of Lord Chaitanya, the experience of Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, their experience, what they felt, the impact it had on them, was just utterly incredible. And our experience is very nice, but it's not on that level. So, the more we chant better, the more we chant better, the more we will experience, and the more we will be able to influence the world. The more our chanting and our preaching and all of our efforts to spread Krishna consciousness, the more they will have an impact on us and on the world. This is how it works. Therefore it is said, if you're familiar with the concepts of Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. Are you familiar with those ideas? Three levels of devotees. Kanishta means lowest level, like a real beginner, like a materialistic devotee. And then Madhyam Adhikari means middle level devotee. And then Uttama Adhikari means first class, topmost devotee of the Lord. Very, very special. Very special devotee of the Lord. So it is said then that a Kanishta Adhikari, a beginner, real beginner, and even quite materialistic devotee, a Kanishta Adhikari may or may not, but may be able to keep himself or herself Krishna conscious. Maybe. Hang in there, hold on in Krishna consciousness, and just keep in there somehow. Like that. Then a second class devotee, middle class devotee, they can keep themselves Krishna conscious. They can keep themselves Krishna conscious. And they can influence others. Some others. In fact, at one time, Prabhupada said, Kanishta Adhikari may be able to keep himself Krishna conscious. A Madhyam Adhikari may be able to keep a temple Krishna conscious. All the different members and all the activities, keep them on track. A Madhyam Adhikari. But then, Prabhupada said, an Uttama Adhikari, first class, pure devotee of the Lord, can make the whole world Krishna conscious. There is a big difference. Very big difference. So, So, you know, there's no sort of secret trick how to become an Uttama Adhikari overnight. Or, if not overnight, at least Uttama Adhikari in 30 days. How's that? Did you ever see a book or buy a book? Speak some language, German, in 30 days. Speak Hindi, Tamil, something like any language, in 30 days. Did you ever see such a book? If you ever did, you must know it's a lie. It's simply a lie. It's just a lie. There is just no way in the world. You can go from zero knowledge of a language to speaking competently in 30 days, and that's all there is to it. I mean, you can speak a few sentences and something. So, from Kanishka Adhikari to Uttama Adhikari in 30 days, in 10 easy steps. So, folks. So, doesn't really work. And all you can do, after all, I mean, what can you do? All you can do is try your best. All you can do is try your best. As long as you actually try your best and don't just sort of, you know, fudge it a bit. So we should try our best and try to improve our chanting. What does that mean, improve our chanting? It means, first and foremost, do you know what it means? First thing it means, chant attentively. Then the next thing, avoid the 10 offenses. And if you chant attentively, it'll become relatively at least much more easy to avoid the offenses. So yeah, we should work on our chanting and really try. Although, we know we're in the same boat as you. We know it's not so easy, but try your best. And the more we actually progress towards offenseless chanting, the more good it will be for us. And the more our experience in Krishna consciousness will just develop in wonderful ways, and the more we'll be able to influence the world, actually. Yeah. So, yes. And the thing is, Krishna consciousness is such a thing. If you really get into it, then you can change in ways you don't expect. Yeah, you can change in ways you don't expect because it is so powerful. If you really get into it, I'll give you a very interesting example. 20 years ago, 1992, 20 years ago, I was in Cape Town for the Christmas Marathon in December. And you know who was the temple president? Shruta. You remember Shruta? Shruta Kirti Prabhu. He was the temple president. So the devotees were going out distributing books on the Christmas Marathon, and they were distributing 20, 30, 40 books in a day, and on a big day someone did 50, 60 maybe, and someone did 70 or so. Then it was like, wow, how did you do that? But then we had a whole big discussion and a series of discussions, basically to the point that we should not restrict ourselves with our mental conceptions of what we are, what we can do, and what we can't do, or what we think we can do, and what we think we can't do. Because actually, we are not the doers. At least, if we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna acts through his devotees. Krishna empowers his devotees. So if we really get into it and become like via mediums, transparent via mediums for Krishna, then Krishna will start acting through us. And, you know, Krishna is acting through us. Oh, amazing things happen. So we're trying to impress this on the devotees, and they got it. And they said, yeah, you're right. We, you know, we just think, I will set a goal, 70 books in a day. And if I can do that, it's just going to be fantastic. But it's not such a big thing. So we can do 100 books, we can do 200, 3, 4. And you know what happened? They really tried to accept this idea of becoming like a via medium for Krishna, not blocking Krishna with our mental conceptions and mental ideas, because they block up the flow of mercy, just like a dam blocks a river. So to take away those mental conceptions, pray to Krishna that he'll give his mercy and work through us. They started meditating like this, and you know what happened? Wow, you know what happened? After like 2 days, everyone was doing 200 books a day, then 3, then 400, then some were doing 500 and 600, and sometimes 700. And one day, one devotee did more than 1,000 books in a day. What do you think, book distributors? Would that be okay? You know, if we're book distributors, we may be sitting here thinking, what? That's not possible. But it happened. It happened. Yeah. So now my point was, what was my point? Am I just rambling? It's sort of like constructive rambling. No, my point, there is a point, is that 2013 is coming. I'm on Chatsworth time. I'm 5 minutes ahead of you here. Phoenix time. So in what? 2 hours and 50 minutes or something along those lines, it will be 2013. You might think it's not such a big thing, it's just tomorrow's just another day like every other day is just another day. But when there are transitions within our lives, when we go through transitional phases from one phase into another, sort of clear, different phase, then that transitional period, if you really like sort of prepare yourself for the next phase, this is called samskara. Samskara. in just like a marriage? Well, different things. First grades, it's a samskar. A child is going from not eating grains into eating grains. It's a change of things. So a samskar, some particular function is performed to make an impression, so the child goes into that next phase sort of on a good footing. Or a wedding. A wedding in Sanskrit is called vivaha samskar. It's a particular function to make an impression in the minds of the people who are getting married, so they can go into that, the married phase, on good footing. So now we're going into 2013, and it would be nice, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it just really be nice if 2013, for all of us, could really be a lot better, like a lot better than 2012? What do you think? I'm not criticizing your 2012. You may have had a very nice one. But what if your 2013 was even better? Like really even better. And you could look back in a year from today, perhaps. You could look back from a little in the future and say, wow, yeah, 2013, my life really took off. Things really developed very positively. So what I'm suggesting then is that we're all going into 2013. Let us try to resolve within our hearts that we want our 2013 to be better than our 2012 because, you know, then we have to think, okay, what am I going to do which will help make it into a better year? But I would like to suggest you consider this point that I've been saying about the book distributors. Let us not limit ourselves by our mental conceptions. What we think we can do, what we think we can't do, what we think is beyond us. Because those devotees in Cape Town in 1992, you know, many of them were young Indian girls from Chatsworth, Phoenix, and so on, Tongat, and, you know, in other words, like yourselves, kind of from somewhat conservative Hindu families, and now here's us, the Hare Krishnas, sticking them out on the street to meet all the people and try and get them all to take books. But they didn't, and they became powerful preachers, and they went, like I said, from 20, 30, 40 books a day to 200, 300, 400 and more. And it wasn't some magic or some, you know, trick. They learned some tricks how to sell things in clever ways. But it was just this basic general point of becoming empowered by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya, and not getting hung up on the mental platform with my preconceived ideas about what I am and what I can do and can't do. Because, you know, In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, a blind man can see the stars in the sky. A lame man can climb mountains. And a child can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedic scriptures. Yeah. So, you know, if a lame man can climb mountains, etc., etc., then what can some competent, capable person, like all of you here, you're all intelligent people, what can some intelligent, capable person do if they really surrender to Krishna and really try to become instruments in his hands and like that, and then get empowered by him? Oh, sure. Amazing things can happen, and amazing things will happen if we really accept these things within our hearts. And in this way, we can spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and make a huge impact, incredible impact. Back in the communist times, one of our devotees was arrested in East Germany. It was part of the communist bloc at that time. So he was German, and he got arrested in East Germany preaching. And the police said to him that, "Who are you? You're Hare Krishna." "Yes, I'm Hare Krishna." And the chief policeman said that, "How many of you are there?" The devotee didn't know what to say. And the policeman said, "I was in West Germany. I visited West Germany. How many people, Hare Krishnas, do you have in West Germany?" At the time, there was approximately 100 Hare Krishnas in West Germany, which, you know, at the time was a country of 40 million people or whatever it may be. A lot of people. But the devotees were really active. They were amazing. The way they were spreading Krishna consciousness, they were really empowered. So this policeman asked the devotee, "How many of you are there in West Germany?" "I was there." So the devotee's thinking, "Wow, there's 100 of us. You know, if I say there's 100, then he'll think we're just some obscure sect. And then they'll lock me up and throw away the key, and that'll be it. I'll be finished." So the devotee said, "In West Germany, we have 5,000 Hare Krishnas." And the policeman said, "What? Is that all? But when I was there, I saw you everywhere." That's amazing. Just a few people can have a huge impact if they really put their minds to it and really surrender to Krishna and get his mercy and become empowered by him. Okay, so thank you all for listening very patiently. As far as I'm aware, what we'll do now is we will have some more kirtan.